They have tape of it. What happened to you? Wait, welcome to Labor Beat Radio, folks. I just started the recorder. You know, recording here on www.enlightenradio.org, and you can always find us there. And also, our player is almost always recording, excuse me, playing at player.enlightenradio.org. And we podcast these live broadcasts that we're normally occurring at 10 a.m. on weekdays now, and Labor Beat on Tuesdays. We record them as podcasts on podcast.enlightenradio.org, and simultaneously, it's also available at Podbean on democracyroad.podbean.com. And anyway, I want to we're going to welcome back JB as soon as he reconnects. He was on before. JB Christensen and I have been doing this program off and on for almost 12 years now. And I mean, good friend Scott Marshall, who's was in Mexico last week, apparently. But anyways, we missed him. And I welcome him from Chicago. And our sort of occasional take, weekly occasional take on the labor movement. I guess I want to open the discussion this morning with just the fact that we're coming up on the very soon, a couple of days actually, the deadline of the National Automobile Negotiation with the big three, Ford, GM, and whatever Chrysler really is right now. It's a little confusing to me who actually owns Chrysler at the moment, but in any event, and the United Auto Workers, who are led by President Sean Fain, of whom we played a significant part of his remarks on the Ford negotiations a week ago, and he was taking a pretty strong stand on the key issues of temporary workers, the two-tier system, and the what the role union labor is going to be playing in the electric car transformation, however you want to put that, as well as a host of work rule issues. And of course, in dealing with the two-tier and inflation, there's a lot of money involved that you know, auto workers have basically lost in the recent times. All that adds up to a very serious situation for automobile workers. They have a over 95% strike vote authorization, I believe, which is pretty good mandate to negotiate from. And what's going to happen in the final days, other than there was a news story out of Bloomberg that indicated that at least Ford was making some movement, and that did seem to be the chief target, even though they're not following the historical pattern of targets exactly. Still, it's a key battle, along with the ongoing conflict in the Hollywood writers, and with a number of other difficult labor negotiations and strikes going on in many places. So, with that opening, I'm just going to hand it off to my partners this morning, and JB Christensen, our my longtime friend and collaborator here, currently president of our Eastern Panhandle CLC, and Scott Marshall, very active with steelworkers retirees, and my longtime buddy and, you know, commie socialist activity as well. So anyway, and so because this is a labor geezer radio a little bit, but anyway, that's okay. But before they bury us, we're going to pass on what we can. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Morning, John.
Hey.
It's a beautiful morning out.
Oh, Oh,
I got the window open. Nice and cool. Not
it's
like you
pretty.
down in Miami, that where it looks like you're in Miami.
Well, I'm not. I'm just at the, those are the shores of the Potomac River and the Shenandoah, coming together here in Harpers Ferry.
You think? You really think so?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah,
The
new
palm
background.
tree is a little out of character, but
You know, there's an app for that, John. You can find another background.
I know
Oh,
I
I know
should
someone.
actually get the, I should get the Confluence. That's what I should get. I think there's a cam right down there on in Harpers
Yeah.
Ferry. Looking at it, I should do,
Yeah.
I should, yeah.
That would be updated. That would be on the ball.
That's true. That's true. Anyway, so oh, and then the other point I was going to open with is that the inflation news is ticking up both in commodities and in oil recently. So not clear how that's probably going to impact the next Fed meeting to continue raising interest rates and force
Yeah.
layoffs, basically. I think that's the hard line. The hawks are saying, Larry Summers is screaming, inflation is too high. So,
It is too high. Every
and
time I go
they
to
don't seem to have
Costco, I
any
get
other way to
reminded.
do it except to force people to buy less. And they do that by laying you a whole bunch of people off.
Oh, I get it. Yeah, if they don't have the money, they can't buy it.
Isn't that right? So that's the way
Starve,
they
starve us, starve us.
capture the market system. Raise prices by raising interest rates or cost of borrowing, and then all people can't companies can't do it, people can't buy it, so they lay off, and then so the purchasing goes down.
Yeah, I want to say something about my background. On the screen, you see that woman?
Yeah.
See that woman in the pink
Yeah,
shirt?
on the right.
Yeah, that's Bea Lumpkin, and all the people behind her is because Bea always says, "Always bring a crowd." So I try to bring the
That's an ABC.
crowd. Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Is
Always bring
B
a crowd.
how's B doing? She's over 100, so
She's 105.
105
Wow.
years old. Wow.
And
Yeah.
we just had our monthly meeting yesterday, and she was there hammering away at really good stuff.
That's great. That is
Record
great.
that. Actually, one of the big points at our meeting yesterday was support for the strike if it happens. And it's actually been pretty incredible, the response. The Local 511, I think it is a big Ford plant, assembly plant, and all of that. And they had a what they call a practice strike last week, and that just meant that they were gathering all the people that will come out for the strike, and it was an incredible crowd, and it was a whole bunch of different unions. It was SEIU, Teamsters, plumbers—I can't even remember all of them—and and the steelworkers. And we just had a meeting of our sub-district that. Then I'm in District 7, and everybody there responded they're going to be on the picket line if there is a strike, and it's just an incredible amount of support. I actually think the percentage of people that voted to strike if necessary was 97%, which is just an incredible, incredible number. And then the solidarity is just it's remarkable. I really don't think we've seen this since FDR. this kind of support. And you also see the changes in you know, for example, the Starbucks workers and the Amazon workers are actually calling for a national contract that would affect all.
That's good.
And that was what led to the CIO. And you think about that kind of strength coming out of the labor movement now, it's really a very hopeful sign.
Well, we got to do somehow figure out a way to move the numbers up, because they're sitting at 6%. And I mean, private sector and 10 overall. I think it went down a little bit this past year by a half a point or something like that. So there's got to be a way to transform this into you know, some more serious numbers. Otherwise, you get all these hot dogs and big shots that think, you know, well, you know, why lift a finger? You know, they're not that powerful anymore. Blah, 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 blah. You know, that kind of stuff. I heard that from a so-called pro-labor Wall Streeter named Stephen Ratner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Rat. Yeah, you know, say he calls himself a union guy. Hey, whatever. Anybody.
Rat. I think 60% is good, John. That's a lot of people, and grow as the strike progresses.
What, 10%? What's the?
He said 60% approval. Is that what you were saying?
No, 97% approval.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
For the strike. But the national labor membership is like, you know, under 10% and or at 10%, and private sector is at 6. I mean, that's, look at that compared to the 30s, where it was 25% just private sector, hardly any public sector at that point. And, you know, the level of power becomes qualitatively different, you know, when you have a whole lot of people, you know.
I mean, if you're working that,
yeah,
or Starbucks or both, that's going to increase the numbers substantially.
So I know. I mean, that's why it's so important. But on the other hand, I mean, calling for a national contract and getting one are not quite the same thing, you know. So
by a long shot. Yeah. But you know, the other thing that, you know, we also have to keep in mind is that there's just so much organizing going on. I mean, it's not just Starbucks and Amazon. You got nurses, you got incredible amounts of people trying to organize a union all across the country. And that, you know, that there's really an upsurge of that. And that's a incredibly important part of this whole story, is that, you know, people are on the move, things are moving. And, you know, I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it again, the coalition that the labor movement is building on progressive issues is just incredible. You know, actually, one of the things that was at that meeting that I went to was, you know, I think both of you know that the idea of bargaining for the common good. Well, there were a lot of community organizations at this rally that had come out and will come out to the picket line if they go on strike, and they're organizing in their neighborhoods to bring people out to support the strike. So that, you know, that's an incredible factor moving forward.
Well, that should be a goal, Richard. Think about around here, if getting a number of people, I mean, a lot of people, not just a few, out to the picket line at the UAW facility, JB.
Right.
You know, so you could, it'd be worth, you know, having the news show up.
Yeah, and then, you know, another thing about that rally I went to was the head of the Chicago Federation of Labor was there and brought people with him.
Well, good.
You know, so
is he from the trades or from industry?
Let me see.
You know?
I really don't know. I really can't remember. I mean, actually, I think he's from the machinists.
No, okay.
I'm not positive, but I think that's what it is.
Right, right.
And they, you know, I mean, that's another thing going on too. Central labor councils are becoming more and more fight back and progressive. And ours is just incredible now. They'll go out on almost anything that comes up that's progressive. It's just staggering remembering the old days.
Yeah.
Well, and having leaders like JB. I mean, come on.
Well, you know, I tell you, I do what I can, but, you know, we all want to do more. Mm-hmm. But you know, the ravages of age kind of slow you down a little bit. But whenever there's a strike, we're usually pretty gung-ho around here. Lately, last few years we have been.
And actually, that reminds me of another thing that's really important, and that is the number of young people that are getting involved in the labor movement. I mean, that's a big part of the change that's going on.
Yeah.
You know, and the unions, like my union, are really trying to build that. You know, we have this thing called the Next Generation, and Next Gen is a remarkable organization. Here in my district, the head of it is an incredible young guy, and he's bringing more and more young people who aren't even in the union yet, out to do things and stuff. So young workers are a big factor.
I see that there's a movement now amongst the railroad workers to nationalize the railroads.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting, you know, and it's gaining a little bit of momentum in the wake of the issues surrounding the national negotiations and then the big accident that took place afterwards. And I think, you know, Ohio, right? So I think that concept of nationalization. And then there's a lot, it needs to be explored a little bit. There's a lot of countries, for example, that own their national railroad system, or they own the tracks, or they own some substantial part of the infrastructure. And then will contract out typically certain operations, right? Including manufacture of locomotives and other kinds of equipment like that. But they establish a national control over infrastructure that, you know, occasionally has happened in the United States. For example, after World War One, or during World War One, the railroads were temporarily nationalized. And in order to figure out a way to get the war materials and supplies organized on a scale that would actually supply the war effort. And then afterwards that I think they sold them back out to auction or something like that. But over time, and I think it also there was it almost happened in World War II again, except that in that case, the rail companies, I think, cut a deal to avoid that by agreeing to do whatever Roosevelt wanted, you know, in advance. So, but nonetheless, you've had under pressure, it has happened, and so you have a lot more than one situation, right? The railroads are an obvious one in the United States now. There's some other infrastructure ones. Typically, the highways are at least heavily federal subsidized. But you have the situation in labor where you take Amazon and Starbucks, you know, using the ordinary tools of the National Labor Relations Board, you know, to get national contract in either of those outfits. And a national contract is obviously required because of the scale and distribution of both of those corporations. That would take an executive order to really make it happen, you know, and not to mention, you know, a sense that it was the majority will of the employees that be the case. That's a political campaign to actually entertain and win the idea of those kind of bargaining rights, right? Which, you know, in a way is an entirely different kind of society than the one we're currently living in. I mean, it really is. When working people at scale have that kind of bargaining power and say in how the whole behavior of corporations would have to change and be altered at least.
And they're not people.
So it'd be interesting to draft a sample of that law, you know, or what would be required to make what would be the right way for that to happen.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes, you know, you can get trapped in either a bureaucratic, there's some administrative change in the leadership of the labor movement that will somehow make this happen. Okay, that kind of deal. Or you can get caught in this other trap, which is to say that one big strike will fix everything. You know, which is the old super syndicalist, you know, kind of IWW type position. I mean, yeah. Don't sign any contracts, go to work each day and don't start work until the wages for that day are negotiated.
Hey, that's ridiculous. So, get any work.
Yeah.
You know, another aspect of what you're talking about nationalizing or whatever, it's not exactly the same thing, but in a lot of places, including Chicago, the idea of expanding mass transit all over the place they're rebuilding parts of the infrastructure for that, trains and that's also incredibly important for the getting old, you forget all the words.
For electric for power
climate. For climate.
Oh, for climate. Yeah, right, yeah.
Because, you know, you get a lot more people going on mass transit and not driving. That cuts down on carbon. So, you know, I think there are lots of angles to pursue that idea.
Well, how can you go to an airport these days to fly and not see, you know, from the standpoint of the customers, the unbelievable mess that deregulation has led to? Okay, it's unbelievable, you know. Plus all the, you know, the security issues of doing airlines in the current way that we're doing it also make it almost it's a nightmare. And if you had a high speed train between New York and Chicago that was comparable to Japan or China or some of the other places, then no one would fly in the current era.
For sure.
You know, what, 4 hours to just get on the train and get it to New York from Chicago? Yeah. Why bother with 2 hours to the airport, you know, and riding on the plane, and then now an hour, and then you got to get off and your baggage is lost. And oh my God. Yes. Delays, overbooked, you know, standing on the runway.
Canceled.
They shall not strand you on the runway for more than 3 hours. Yeah, I think we could. That's how does that culture change for the United States? Everybody, oh, that's communism. That's communist. Well, oh, okay. I guess it is. It's a dose of communism. Yeah. But maybe, you know, the dose of capitalism we have over here is like OxyContin.
That's a good analogy.
We got so much of it that we got more than anybody else in the world. I mean, we could somebody gives you, you know, retirement. Oh, that's communism.
Great analogy, Jim.
Yeah.
You know, another thing about calling it communism is that, you know, a lot of people don't really realize where that term came from the French commune movement. That was really an important thing. And I'll tell you, communalism, or whatever you want to call it, you know, it really solves a lot of problems for working people. I mean, communism does too, but I'm just saying that you know, there are these co-ops that are rising in the country that are also, you know, based on taking care of the needs of the workers. And if you have a, you know, for example, in the steel workers, we have a coalition with a group called Mondragon. And Mondragon is a co-op movement, and we've actually recovered a plant that was making windmill blades for the turbines, and it shut down. And with Mondragon's help, it was reopened and became a co-op, and still employing even more workers than it did before. And that kind of thing can also be pushed.
Is it Spanish based?
And you know, I think it's in North Dakota or someplace that one of the banks that is a co-op and has been for many, many years was one of the only ones that hasn't failed ever since they became a co-op. So
the North Dakota State Bank, I think it's called.
Yeah,
it was organized during the Depression way back,
right
after that. Yeah,
and that's a red state.
Yeah,
it is now. It was a Bolshevik state back in the 20s and 30s.
but it's also interesting that nobody's attacking that bank.
Right.
None of the Republicans are saying, "Oh no, that's communism. We can't have that."
Well, that's right. Where a good part of the mortgages farm mortgages are managed is through that bank.
Yeah.
So I don't think anyone's going to be messing with it. You know.
No.
But we can use that example when the Republicans, you know, cut down unions.
Yeah.
And, that's a great idea. And the one you brought up about the business that was failing, That's another great example, Scott.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, God knows we need more windmills. You know, we have to.
Yeah.
And for something like that to close down, and we don't know why. I'm sure it wasn't from lack of business. We don't know why it closed down.
I don't know why. No.
Yeah.
I mean, the closed down business is just an opportunity, right? I mean, it happened right next door to us, the Anvil restaurant. You know that restaurant, JB?
With the one that we've been
shut down. It shut down day before yesterday.
It did. And,
it's been immediately sold to already arranged to be someone else is going to buy it, and I don't know what they're going to do with it, but I mean, it's like when they asked Jamie Dimon, you know, gee, are you too big to fail? And he says, I don't really know what that means.
conveniently.
I mean, if I fail, there's a whole bunch of vultures around that'll eat me up. You know, what's the big deal? You know.
And how do you define failure? I'll still be a billionaire.
that. Right. So I don't know. We got and I also, you know, I see they talk inflation every day on the business media. Okay. I mean, they're just, you know, because nothing deflates the value of a bank's loans faster than inflation. I mean, right. They charge you 2% for the loan, but if inflation goes to 4%.
They're losing
out like a bandit as far as the loan goes. Okay. You know, and then they're making it, they're losing money. Okay. And so they go nuts with it. And but they don't take a minute's look at that trillion and a quarter military budget, which is entirely inflationary. Okay. That just can keep going up and up and up and up and up and up, and it's like, you can't do anything about it. And the military is always got all kinds of, you know, reasons to explain to you why, if you turn them down, you could be blown the hell up. they can create a security risk for you to ponder, you know, probably four or five times a day if they want to. And and they know that it generates support for their solution to Iraq, or their solution to, you know, Kuwait, or their solution to Afghanistan, or, you know, I mean, et cetera, et cetera. Their solution to China, to Taiwan, to this, to that. All very expensive and not oriented toward any concept of peaceful coexistence. Right. I mean, it's not, because the military doesn't think about that. They think security means domination, period. I mean, you know, that's the only meaning of security, you know, in their textbook. Okay. So, and that's an ancient principle. It's not like that's new. But, you know, in a globalized and nuclear powered world. Wow.
Yeah.
I think you got to figure out a different way.
And you can't forget the profit motive.
No, and of course, yeah. I mean, it's the old kind of profit that used to be in England, like that when House of Commons overthrew the House of Lords, because the House of Lords had turned into a set of monopolies, yeah, of various products, right? That the king would anoint you with if you were a good lord or a bad lord, as far as, you know, him goes. And they overthrew that because they didn't want to have state, but the military is like a classic version of, you know, a monopoly a set of monopoly forms that depend entirely upon having this privileged position, right? If they had to go out in the, if Boeing had to survive in the market, well, they couldn't do it. They wouldn't, they wouldn't be Boeing as they currently exist. They'd be something quite different.
Can we blame inflation on the military, John?
Well, partly. Yeah, I mean, you can't say that it's not a major factor. Okay, there's other things. Okay, the prices of oil, blockages in supply chains. Yeah, I mean, there are other factors, but that $1 trillion military budget—that's all extra cash that doesn't ever really go very much in circulation. Okay,
yep. And they're insane. It goes up. It always goes up.
It does go in circulation, but you don't get any goods for it. I mean, you don't get anything you can eat or use or build or consume or trade. You get none of that you get for it, but all the cash spent to create it, it goes into circulation, chasing all those goods that are in trade. What remains?
Well, we get a theoretical good for it. Theoretical good for it. That's world peace. But how long has it been since we've seen that?
You have to question whether the consequences of the U.S. has been peace. That's going to be a tough case to make, you know, in my opinion. But
peace through strength, right? Isn't that what Reagan said? Peace.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, and where did that take us?
Yeah, I mean, it just
that was a
it's a rabbit hole,
wasn't it?
Actually, I think it's to make sure that U.S. corporations, you know, nobody damages their property anywhere in the world. I mean, that's what it's really for. You know, some government in Africa wants to, we're going to raise the tax rate to your investment here to 50%. Yeah, well, guess who owns your military?
Have you checked lately? Have you checked the post office box?
Well, exactly.
Where the checks are coming in?
Yeah, I don't think we'll have to withdraw that tax for the moment.
Jeez.
You know, anyway, so yeah,
they're not, you know, bad. There's another link to all this, and that's the NRA and the gun rights stuff.
That's all. No,
I mean, that's just I don't know. It's just insane.
Have you been to a gun shop lately?
No.
Well, it will surprise the hell out of you. A, that the weapons look like kiddie toys. They're made out of plastic. And B, semi-automatic weapons. It's thousands and thousands of dollars, and the stuff's made out of plastic. You know, the gun barrels and all that, they're made out of plastic now.
Well, does that mean they can go through a...
I'll take you, John. I'll take you to the one right down the street.
Okay.
They still have...
Carol doesn't want me to have weapons in the house. You told me to have more.
But the appearance of them is, but we can't say anything bad about it because they'll escort us out of the building. You know, if we say guns kill kids and stuff like that.
Oh, right.
They'll probably put you in jail.
We hopefully won't, you know. No, I haven't. There's a gun shop right a block.
Not here. Yeah, well, you know, Tim Hafer is a huge real estate guy, and he retired. He opens up a gun shop. He's probably making more money at the gun shop than he ever did in real estate.
Well, every time there's a murder, the gun sales go up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's no one's going to disarm until there's a peace treaty in reality in the country. You know, there has to be. Otherwise, you know, why disarm?
You have to get rid of the reason why.
You're breaking up a little bit, buddy.
Fear.
He's got terrible internet service there in Hedgesville.
Right. You know, that's because I'm on Frontier. Actually,
we don't even
have internet right now. I'm on LTE.
Okay.
I can help out by doing that.
We're at 35.
That's much better, right?
I suggest that we
if I take the video off, that usually helps a lot.
Messages to the
it's
auditor.
Not helping. All right.
Why don't we take a round here and each of us say because I think we're all going to be committed to support them as we go forward, but maybe. Something appropriate, you know, to encourage our brothers and sisters to keep focused on this important struggle. Scott, why don't you go first?
Well, I think we've discussed a hell of a lot of what we need to do. And the thing now is to just get more and more people involved. And in fact, one of the things that we're trying to do now is to get into other union meetings as, you know, a guest speaker or whatever, to talk about it and to talk about how we need to mobilize for it and how important it is to all of us, all workers, that they get a good contract.
JB.
Well said, Scott. Well, I think this class that we're going to be in the roundtable here coming up at Shepherd is perfectly timed with this strike, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be a strike because they're pretty far apart. It's okay to call it a strike. I think it's going to happen. Our labor council will support it. We probably have several different shops in our area that we can visit to support the strikers. And, you know, hopefully this will be a wake-up call for corporate America that they got to start paying their workers a living wage. You know, we got to have a living wage out there so people can have a life and send their kids to school. I mean, we didn't have the problems that we have today as far as education goes. And, you know, we all realize that education is the key. So hopefully this will go a long way to organize the teachers and all the other, you know, Amazon and Starbucks. With a show of strength with the UAW, this could have great effect going forward.
Amen. And I echo both of my our co-host comments here. I guess the most important thing is going to be how much support can show up on the UAW picket lines as the first thing. And second, you know, how much can be raised to help out with whatever other support activities that have to take place in any strike, right? You know, in any strike, you got bills to pay. Usually the strike benefits are not enough to pay all those benefits. People got to find some people have to find other jobs if they can for the duration of the strike. And then there's, you know, the whole, you know, maintaining a culture of a strong community amongst all the people who are actually on strike, you know. So wherever we can pick up the help there, because the most important thing is, can they sustain themselves in the fight with the company, and can there be enough community support to prevent scabbing? So those are the core tasks, and I look forward to doing whatever we can, because once you get engaged in a fight like this, you can't lose. Yep. You have to win. That requires determination and sometimes sacrifice. So anyway, let's wish everybody the best. And of course, if we show a strong enough show, and I suspect that the president of the United States is working pretty hard in the background to convince the corporations to at least meet something that would be acceptable. Whether that happens or not, we don't know yet either. There's some chance that they can come to a deal. And if that's the case, and it ends up like the UPS did with a pretty good settlement, given the circumstances, and then we can hope for that, and that we'll meet that and help build on that if that turns out to be the case. Anyway, all right, everybody, take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next. We'll be back again next week at 10 a.m. on Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Bye.